From Autosport.com, Autosport Magazine, I'm Kevin Turner, and this is the Autosport Racing Podcast. Listeners will know, we've recently launched a new channel, Autosport Racing Podcast, basically to give a bit more of a spotlight to the non-F1 championships. Obviously, we've got the Autosport F1 channel, we've got Autosport Retro and Autosport National. But Autosport Racing is to focus on those other major championships so we can have special guests talk about the big races. Today, we're going to be talking about the British Touring Car Championship, which is kicking off at Donington Park at the end of April. So I've got two special guests with me. The first is our BTCC correspondent, Marcus Simmons. Marcus, how are you doing? Looking forward. The season seems just a long time to get going, isn't it? End of April, come on.
It's taking a long time, and we're all sitting inside doing a podcast, and apparently it's 21 degrees outside. So I bet the chances of it being 21 degrees and sunny when we get to Donington at the end of April are reasonably remote. So if it was happening this weekend, I'd be really happy. But I'll probably get a bit sunburnt.
Well, we have to have words with Alan Gow about the calendar, which will always go well because he'll just do what he wants anyway, won't he? So, as someone who knows that very well, is returning triple champion, Gordon Shedden. Gordon, welcome back to the BTCC and welcome to your sport podcast. How are you doing?
Yeah, good to see you guys. Thanks for having me on. So yeah, we're all good, and I would officially like to say that I am basking in the sunshine at Knockhill today, so there's not a cloud in the sky.
Well, I was going to ask you what you're up to, but we've got a bit of a hint of it because in the background we can hear some cars going around at Knockhill. So what have you got there at the moment, Gordon?
So it's testing this afternoon, first round of Scottish Championship car racing this weekend. So we've got some legends going around. I think there's some minis, there's some Superlap Scotland cars, all sorts. So yeah, we could almost hear the engine and kind of see what it is as the afternoon goes on.
Yeah, it's a nice background noise. Just the secret between you and me, I actually quite like legends, but don't tell anyone because it's a little bit embarrassing to admit that. But I think they're rather good. Okay, so let's get down to it then. So Gordon, I mean, obviously you've been away for a couple of seasons. So why now are you returning to British Touring Cars? And why Speedworks? Obviously, going to be racing a Speedworks Toyota Corolla. So how did you get to this point?
It was a little bit left field, to be fair, is probably the best way to put it. It wasn't kind of on my radar, really since the end of 22, since the Dynamics kind of deal folded. And I was pretty kind of, I think I've been pretty kind of consistent all, you know, since then, saying that I wouldn't come back unless I thought I had an opportunity to win races and to, you know, ultimately try and fight for a championship. And you know, there's been a few, inevitably over the last couple of years, the phone rings and, you know, people asking what I'm doing. But for me, it just wasn't, you know, maybe not the right opportunity. You know, I don't think, you know, my motivation isn't to be on the grid. My motivation is to win races and to win championships. So, you know, I'm not really that interested in running around in, you know, somewhere in the teams, going through the motions. So, you know, then you know, everything kind of snowballed pretty quickly. You know, the contact that I had from Toyota and then from Speedworks was, you know, I think, I mean, it was only like 3 weeks or something or a month or something before we announced it. It came together that late. But it was just such enthusiasm. You know, when they told me what they'd been doing, what had been happening, you know, the desire to take a step forward, it just gave me a very different feeling inside. I think that's kind of the only way I can describe it. I think, you know, what Christian and Amy and Danny have got going on there is the right thing. They're sensible. They're motorsport people at heart, and I can relate to that. You know, they want, yes, it's a business, but it is motorsport. I think, you know, sometimes it's nice to be the underdog, but also be champing at the bit to run right at the front.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Christian Ditt will be very upset. You've described him as normal and sensible. I don't think he's going to be a fan of that at all. But I do know exactly what you mean. It's been a great little team. And Marcus, actually, it's good time, isn't it, for the championship? Because, you know, we have lost over the off-season. We've lost, you know, four-time champion Colin Turkington, which I think a lot of people will be disappointed about. Obviously, Rob Huff hasn't got a deal lined up either. So Gordon coming in is a nice, good bit of news for the championship. And how do you think the grid is looking overall now? We've got a few extra cars.
I think the grid's looking excellent. Obviously, we dropped to the 20 cars last year, up to 24 for this season, which is pretty much an ideal number. I'm totally in agreement with Alan Gow on this. I think once you're getting up towards 30, it's actually more trouble than it's worth because safety cars and all that kind of thing. So when you've got sort of between 20 and 25, you've got a good field of cars, which doesn't look small because it is reasonably big. And you tend to get quite clean racing as well, or clean races, I should say. and the quality of it is really good. And some of the late deals that are being put together are really intriguing, actually. And we're not really looking at what we have done over the past few years, where there's two or three drivers on the grid who you think, they'll just be at the back. But there, it's actually, yeah, the people that have been coming in, apart from Scottish three-time champions, in the same team we've got James Dorlin, for example. There was a similarly kind of out of the blue thing, although he's been friends with Danny Buxton, who Gordon mentioned at Speedworks, since Danny was working at McLaren and steered him down that direction in the GT route after he'd been runner-up in the Clio Cup. So Charles Rainford coming over from Carrera Cup runner-up last year to effectively take Colin's place at West Surrey Racing. And this is a driver that's very well qualified to compete in the BTCC and probably compete well. So some of those earlier in the season as well, for example, earlier in the off-season, for example, Max Hall, who's come in as Mini Challenge runner-up, and I've been really, really impressed with him in testing in the Unlimited Motorsport Cupra. So the people that are coming in, I think we can be well encouraged that they are good talents for the BTCC future. And, of course, bringing back Gordon, we've got that still the top line, same count of top line drivers that we had before we lost Colin. So it's really good for the championship, and I think it's going to be a good season.
Yeah, things are looking pretty positive. So Gordon, I know you've only done a couple of tests in the Carrera, but I'm interested to know how does the Toyota compare to, well, let's be honest, the Honda Civics. I mean, that's the car, isn't it? In its various iterations, it's kind of, you've made your name in touring cars. I mean, it's quite a small wheelbase kind of hatchback type car. So does it feel quite familiar and similar, or did you get in and go, oh no, okay, this is going to take a bit of getting used to?
No, you're absolutely right. I think, to be fair, we ran at Snetterton just over a week ago, and that was just very much a shakedown. You know, we didn't really kind of achieve anything setup-wise or anything. But day two at Croft was the first day that I really got into it. And you know what? It just felt like an FK2 Civic. It felt like that original car that was on its tiptoes, was on the nose, was everything that I wanted it to be. And to the point where I started going back my notes from like 2016, 2017 to see what I'd written about different sessions and different scenarios from back then, because the messages and the feedback that I was getting from the front end in particular was very, very similar to that car, which was a great thing for me. It was everything I hoped.
And you've got Neil Brown on the engine as well, haven't you? So it's another familiar feel to it. It was that pretty similar as well?
Yeah, to be fair, when this looked like it might happen, that was very much a phone call that I made to Wayne and the guys at MBE. You know, obviously all the way through the Dynamics days, it was Neil Brown engine. So their philosophy, I guess, although it's a different engine, their philosophy, I guess, remains the same. And I've got some familiar faces. I've got Jim, who's my engine guy, for the last kind of 4 years at Dynamics, which is great. I know a lot, you know, Wayne and, you know, Gav and the guys there. So they know, I guess, what I want. Which is great, and then I know what I can expect from them, and that goes just beyond, you know, give me more power, but it goes down to they know where I've been with throttle maps, they know where I've been with, you know, how I want you know, the power delivery to feel and to be. So, you know, that maybe just, wouldn't say it shortcuts it, but it gives me that element of comfort that they know what has worked well for me in the past, I guess.
Yeah, nice to have that feeling right from the start, isn't it? Have you had a chance to work with your teammates yet, or have you just been very much sort of focused on getting back in the swing of it, learning the car and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think we ran two cars. So Aaron ran at Snetterton, and then we ran all four cars for the first time at Croft. To be fair, you know, with the four cars and you've got so much going on, it's quite difficult to do so much in a very short space of time. So, you know, I think we worked quite hard on, you know, and the things that just need to be done for all the cars that will transfer across, you know, whether that's setup wise, whether it's start procedure, whether it's dashboard setup, you know, all this kind of stuff needs to change because there's no hybrid for, you know, for this year. So it's fundamentally a different power delivery. But yeah, they're, you know, having kind of observed what they're doing and how they're working so far, I think they'll be absolutely fine. I think, you know, it'll all come together for them. I have no doubts about that at all.
And Marcus, Speedworks have been threatening for a few years, haven't they? They've won races, not quite managed to make that final step to be a consistent sort of title challenging squad. So why do you think that is? And do you think that we can see that changing now?
Well, it's been a period of a lot of change at the team, really. The Neil Brown engine only came in for 2023. And when we say a Neil Brown engine, obviously we mean a Toyota block, which Neil Brown then developed for use in a BCCC car. Obviously, and before then, the team was using the Toka engine. So obviously you've got a different dimension engine, different weight distribution, all that kind of thing. So try and get your heads around and that was Rory Butcher's last year with the team, who Gordon obviously has a connection with. and then for 24, it was an all-new lineup with, obviously you mentioned Rob Huff, and was sort of the flagship signing, but Josh Cook came on board as well, who everybody rates as a BCCC top liner. And then obviously, again, it's all change again for 2025. But there was an interesting theory that Gordon told me when I was at Snetterton last week to do the story in the magazine, in the May issue of Autosport. That's a bit of a plug here, coming out shortly, about just getting the hybrid implemented into a small hatchback front-wheel drive touring car, which also had knock-on effects with the Honda. So Gordon, yeah, let's talk through that for the podcast.
Yeah, I think as Marcus alluded to there, the hybrid system was quite chunky, shall we say. You know, there was limit, and the smaller the car, I think there was less options as to where the battery could go, how that affected the weight distribution on the car, but more importantly, how they could actually package the hybrid motor and the cooling required for that in the engine bay. And I think it was very much compromised in the Toyota, not to anything that the team had done wrong, but just to physical lack of space. There was nowhere to put all the cooling. So, you know, when you looked at the install, it was okay, but I think the bigger cars over the last couple of years, so when you look at the BMW, the Hyundai, are definitely, you know, there is actually more physical space in the engine bay, you know. And even when you look at the Ford engine bay is actually reasonably sized relative, you know, it's a short enough car, but the engine bay is still a decent size in that car. So, you know, I think taking the hybrid system out is definitely not a negative for the Toyota.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see. I do feel a little bit sorry for the teams having spent all that effort getting their cars to work with a hybrid and then it's gone. But that's part of the challenge of being in motorsport, isn't it? These changing goalposts. But let's have a little bit of a history lesson now, Gordon. So obviously, you when you first, I guess, left the BTCC at the end of 2017, like, you're still front runner, things going, you know, going well. But obviously, you took the decision to go and do WTCR with the WRT Audi team, which was quite a punt. So, first of all, why did you decide to do that then? And obviously, it turned out to be sort of quite a challenging experience. But are you still pleased that you took that decision when you had the opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, everything happens for a reason, I guess. But I think probably got to, in 2017. I think everything was fine. We were going along okay. I think about kind of halfway, three quarters of the way through 2017, it just felt like we'd got to that point where we just didn't have enough power again in the Honda, where we'd just been nobbled on boost a little bit. And I thought, having been successful in 15 and 16, I was just like, this doesn't feel right. But we're really good at the start of the year. Then all of a sudden, it was kind of dropping off a little bit. And the only thing that changed was the speed of some of the other cars in a straight line. And that was a bit frustrating, I guess. But we plugged away and still had a kind of good year. And then, funnily enough, talking about Huffy, he was doing some TCR Europe stuff at the time with Leopard, with the Volkswagen team. And there was a clash with the last round of World Touring Cars, I think, at Macau. So the last round of TCR was at Dubai. European TCR, but the last round was in Dubai in October, November. So I substituted for Huffy with Leopard and the Volkswagen, stuck it on pole, and finished in the top, finished the podium in both races. So it was that all felt good. And then the Audi thing kind of came on the back of that, because WRT were running the Volkswagen. Then all of a sudden the Audi thing kind of came on some. And I guess, you think about Audi and Audi Sport and everything that they've achieved in the past, and I thought this will be absolutely mega. Obviously, I didn't really want to leave BTCC on like a one-year kind of deal. So they offered me a multi-year deal. But in hindsight, I mean, the car just wasn't good. The car was very, very basic compared to some of the other TCR cars that were out there. And to put that in perspective, I think Audi built a car to the spirit of the regulations, so shall we say, which I think was the car had to be €130,000, I think. So they obviously built a car probably at €80,000 and made 40, 50 grand profit on every car that they sold. Whereas the Hyundai was probably a £200,000 car and a full race car, and they were happy to lose €50,000 on every car that they sold. But it was fundamentally a different formula. Maybe it was a little bit, not naive, but maybe expected that the way that all balanced out would have been a little bit better, shall we say.
But was it still a good learning experience, because it was something different, wasn't it? It must have added, I guess, something to your repertoire that you didn't have before.
Yeah, totally. And it was, I guess it let me see how another team worked, because, I mean, ultimately, until that point, it basically all been at Dynamics. I think it gave me, one thing pretty early on is that it definitely gave me an appreciation of how much Dynamics put into it, and the level that the British teams are generally at, just across the board in prep. Is very high. But yeah, from a driving point of view, to get the opportunity to go and drive some iconic circuits, and from Suzuka to Sepang in Malaysia to Macau to Hungaroring, street circuit in Portugal, all sorts of different things, from an experience point of view, that island was really enjoyable. And ultimately, although it was challenging in areas, I still came away from it having, been a race winner in World Touring Cars at that little known place that nobody knows about called Wuhan.
Yeah, it wasn't quite so famous at that point, was it?
No.
So, yeah, that's a whole different type of podcast. We'll perhaps save that for another day. but Marcus, I mean, listeners may not be, especially British Touring Car fans, might not be particularly familiar with WTCR or TCR World Tour as it is now. But it's quite a competitive and proper drivers, proper. Well, I know that the cars can vary a little bit, as Gordon said, but it's some proper drivers in there. It's quite a competitive challenge, isn't it, that perhaps flies a bit under the radar for Brits.
Yeah, I mean, I did have to just look up to remind myself of who the leading contenders were during that era where Gordon was taking part in it. It is a championship that sort of flies under the radar of the average British motorsport enthusiasts because it never comes here. So, but 2018, the first year he did it, first was Gabriele Tarquini, winning a world championship at the age of 56. Second was Ivan Muller. So those are two names that are well known in this country. And then, you know, Rob Huff was eighth that year behind people who are very well established as leading drivers in that arena, such as Esteban Guerrieri, Norbert Mikulicz, Ted Bjork, Jean Carvenet, people like that. 2019, Gordon's second year, I was looking it up and I remembered that Andy Prio, who we all know is a fairly world-class touring car driver, finished 18th in the championship that year. So, it's very, there's a very high quality of drivers in there. They're just not necessarily known to people in this country.
I mean, it was also a very political championship as well, because the way that their balance of performance worked was on an average of the cars. So, Andy will say very similar to me, you know, in many ways we ended up as a sacrificial lamb for some of the, you know, for the other cars of the brand, because if one went fast, somebody had to get the bum end of the deal to go slow. And that was, you know, when you look at, you know, the link thing that Andy was involved in, you can see that, you know, a very kind of similar thing as what I was having to deal with. And we, you know, we spoke about that, funnily enough, somewhere in the world. We're sat in an airport shaking our heads going, what have we got ourselves into here? Why are we putting up with this?
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it, with balance of performance categories. Well, I mean, this is perhaps a bit unfair question, Gordon, but given the pace of the FK8 Civic subsequently, and Dan Kamish came within, what, a lap and a half of winning the crown in 2019 with it, do you think you could have added to your title tally? Or do you not like to think about what ifs?
I mean, everyone up and down the pep team's got ifs and buts, haven't they? You know, but, you know, yeah, for sure that car was really strong that year. You know, and I would have liked to have thought, you know, I'd been somewhere in the mix. But, you know, Dan was real strong. He was real consistent that year. He did a cracking job. And it was, you know, that was pretty kind of gut-wrenching for everybody to have that as the finale, you know, to a season in BTCC. But that's generally what happens in touring cars, isn't it? It literally is over till it's over. But, yeah, you look back and go, what if? But, yeah, I'm also quite content that I made my decision. You stand by your decisions and you get on with it and you go and make the best of. And, you know, there's a phrase in Scotland up here, and I don't know whether it translates down where you guys are, but what's for you won't go by you. And basically, you know, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be, and if it's not, it's not. So, yeah. And as I always say, it is what it is. That's my kind of phrase.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair enough. Well, I mean, obviously, you did come back to drive said Civic in 2021-22. It was sort of from afar. It looked sort of a mixed bag, sort of winning races, but perhaps not quite into the championship fight that you would have been hoping for. So, how do you look at that sort of that 2 year period, 2021-22?
Yeah, I think 2021 we just had a load of bad luck. That was, I mean, it was just, you know, it was a poor season with things going wrong. I think we still finished sixth or something like that. And when you get to the end of the season at a British Touring Car Championship, knowing how competitive it is, and you say, yeah, we had a lot of things that didn't, like, really just didn't kind of go our way, and we still finished sixth. I don't think that was horrific. I think we all expected it to be a little bit better in 22. And, you know, they built new cars for 22 at Dynamics to cope with the hybrid, new chassis. The way that the Honda engine was with the hybrid just wasn't ideal. I think the Honda engine is it flows very, very well. The head flow was very, very good as a standard engine. So therefore, it's always been a bit shy on boost, and obviously boost gives torque. So that combined with the hybrid meant that it just tipped slightly the wrong way. It was very, very touch and go whether it was competitive or whether it wasn't, depending on what circuits we were on, gear ratios and such like. But, you know, still, you know, won a couple of races in 22, finishing the podium loads and loads of times. And I think for me, the only thing I would kind of throw out there is that my car, in its exact form, went to Josh Cook the year after, and he didn't trouble the top of the podium at all at any time during 23. So, you know, did we underperform or did I make the best of what we had? I'll kind of leave that one for you guys to mull over.
I'm sure Marcus will have written that in the season review. Marcus, I have to dig it out from the archive.
we could probably get Josh Cook to come on for a couple of minutes and completely agree, actually.
Now, of course, during that season, Gordon, you had, I guess Steve Neal was sort of not so well, let's say, at that point. So perhaps just take a moment now to talk about how big, well, not just Steve, I suppose Matt as well, like the Neal family, how big an impact they've had on your career. I know obviously you're not coming back with them, but I mean, a lot of people associate you with that team. So perhaps, yeah, talk a little bit about working with Steve.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess to go way back, you've got to remember, you know, Steve started Team Dynamics to facilitate match racing, essentially. And, you know, it was a one-car operation all the way through Super Touring with the mega results with Nissan. You know, as everyone remembers, them winning the £250,000 at Donington as an independent, you know. And then going to this kind of two-car team in BTCC. And, you know, Steve was very much a visionary. I think with everything that he did in life, he was hard. He was, you know, I'm not saying he was an easy person to deal with under any stretch of the imagination, but his heart was in the right place. You know, and he was just absolutely desperate to go racing and to win and to have performance. But, you know, when I look back now, I actually think, geez, you know, because they gave me, you know, between Matt and Steve, you know, they gave me an opportunity to jump into BTCC in 2006 when Matt had just won his first championship as an independent with the Integra. And all of a sudden they've got the courage and the, I don't know, maybe foresight's the wrong word, but to put some little kid from Scotland who'd only driven a Fiesta up until that point in alongside Matt, you know, where he's the reigning champion. You know, and, you know, over the years, I'd like to say I kind of helped repay their faith in me, you know, with, you know, by being...
I think they'd agree with
you
that.
Know, you know, like committed to it, you know, but I do, you know, Steve, geez. You know that in all the years that I raced for Dynamics, he only phoned me three times. He phoned me three times and he fired me every time that he phoned me. So every other time that he phoned, I'd just reject it and then phone Matt on the other phone and try and find out what on earth was going on and what else had happened. And then Matt was like, he'd just roll his eyes and go, ah, just give an hour, he'll forget about it and he'll be on to something else. But, you know, that was just his kind of, like, you know, it was almost 2 feet in with, like, the big call and then kind of backtrack out of it a little bit later. going a little bit further on, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, yeah, a real kind of, like, sad kind of end to, you know, a sad end with Steve, you know, having been such a forceful kind of, you know, leader, I guess, you know, a real kind of, you know, a leader of Dynamics, a real kind of, you know, inspirational, whether, you know, there wasn't a lot of cuddling going on, but he was definitely inspirational and motivating people to be the absolute best. And, you know, he would back that up with, you know, with his own funding, with everything, anything that those cars needed to go fast would be, you know, was never in question with Steve, you know. And I think that was, you know, there's not many people would do that. You know, in fact, and just to kind of backtrack a bit, I'm jumping back and forward. But I remember at the end of 2011, which was the last of the normally aspirated engines before we all jumped onto turbo engines in 2012 with the NGTC cars, Matt and I were both in the hunt for the championship in 2011. And Matt got a new engine at the second last round, which was an upgrade from Neil Brown. And there was only one available, so Matt, you know, it went in Matt's car for the second last round. And I thought, oh, well, yeah, I'd probably do the same, Steve. Like, that would be, you know, that'd be what it was. And then in between the second last round and the last round, there was another engine appeared for me for the last round that Steve paid out of his own pocket to make sure we both had an equal chance at the last round at Silverstone. And that engine was going to be scrap at the end of the round because we were moving on to something else. And I think that is just a mark of everything that Steve was. And everyone said, oh, you'll never get the same equipment as Matt. You'll never get a fair crack at the whip. It's all about Matt. No, it wasn't the experience I had at Dynamics. It never has been.
No, and you wouldn't have stayed there as long as you did if you felt like that anyway, would you? So, yeah, I think proof's in the pudding, isn't it? I mean, how much of it, obviously, it sort of came to an end at the end of 22, a little bit from an external point of view, is quite a surprise with how Halford's pull out. Was that, how much of it was it a surprise to you? Was that a rare phone call? How did that come about?
Yeah, that wasn't a great situation, really. It wasn't great for anybody because, you know, we invested in the engine program, continued over the winter of 22. You know, there was a lot of kind of improvements because Dynamics really, they kept all the staff on. It was one area where they're very different from a lot of teams, that people were employed all the way through the winter. They didn't lay people off and re-employ them. So we'd gone all the way through the winter. And the Halfords deal was, you know, my understanding of the Halfords deal was it was always ever a one-year deal. They'd never sign up for any more than 1 year. And it was sometimes late, it was sometimes early. I know in previous years that there had been certainly been more than one occasion when we were racing and the deal wasn't even signed, and then it would get signed in June. You know, it was a bit like that. And there was no reason to kind of think that it would be any different. And I think, everything was full steam ahead. And then it was first week in March, there was like an email came. I mean, it was pretty blunt, like, we're not continuing. And it was like, really? Like, where's that come from? And that caught everybody out of the blue. It caught, you're thinking of the mechanics, the staff, like, you know, what we're going to do, how do we kind of make sure they're okay? And, you know, I found out, obviously, the same day that Matt found out, he was straight on the phone saying, look, this has happened. And, it's pretty late by that stage. But then, obviously, from Dynamics' point of view, you've got to try and find a home for the cars and for the kit and for the people. And I think it was, you know, morally for me, I didn't feel in a position to start phoning teams going, what's available, what's happening? Because as soon as I pick up the phone and start phoning around the paddock, everyone's going to turn around and go, well, what's happened at Dynamics? And all of a sudden it's a fire sale for the cars and for the bits and for, you know, the trucks and everything else as well. And, you know, I owe a lot more to Matt than to be doing something like that. So I stayed quiet until, you know, Matt did his deal to sell the cars to, you know, to Steve Dudman. And, you know, by that time it was way too late to sort anything out from, you know, from a personal point of view. But again, I'm comfortable that I did the right thing. I can sleep straight in bed at night having done morally the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Marcus, I mean, I know we said that obviously the grid is looking good for 2025, but I think it's worth saying it doesn't feel quite the same without Team Dynamics, does it? That definitely did leave a bit of a hole in the championship.
Yeah. And we've got a couple of the Hondas back on the grid now, albeit the pre-2022 ones. But yeah, for 2024 season, we had no Hondas, which is unheard of in 21st century BCCC, isn't it? So, the team was very much part of the landscape, hugely successful. Most of the people from that team are still in the paddock, albeit in a different job now. It was a good force in the championship and definitely missed. And Steve as well. I mean, I came back to covering the championship in 2020 after two decades of not covering it, but just following it from afar and jumping in and bumping into people occasionally, like Gordon, for example, when he was doing the World Touring Car Cup. But Steve was, and Matt, of course, were part of the landscape in the 1990s when I covered it before. And Steve was always at the centre of paddock gossip. It was like he was the oracle of everything that was going on. And normally we'd relate things with a chortle and a and a glint in his eye. So he kind of definitely looked on him as one of the good guys and the entertaining guys in the paddock.
I must admit, I do remember I was in the dynamics awning at one point, and Steve said something that Matt overheard, and Matt went, "You cannot say that. You can't say that." I was like, "It's all right, Matt. I'm not writing it down anyway. It's okay. Don't worry. Just let Steve vent sometimes. It's all right."
Well, if Matt said you can't say it, then it must have been really,
must have been really bad.
All right, back to Gorn. Before we finish, a couple more little bits. And one is, I mean, obviously, you said you'd only come back with a competitive package. I think we're all agreed that a Speedworks Toyota is going to be competitive. But what's the target for 2025? Is it race wins? Is it a championship challenge? Is it too early to say? What in your mind would be a good season come October?
Honestly, I don't know, because until we get going, it's very difficult to predict. And I think I think testing. Like I said, day two at Croft, was good for me. That got the car a lot more where I wanted it. But I don't know where everybody else is. We've still got more to come. We haven't, deployed all the power. There's plenty. We've got more to come. But until we get to qualifying for round one, as I've been here many times where people have disappeared up the road in pre-season testing, and aren't there by the time it gets to the first round. And I've also been there when we've been really strong in previous years and pre-season testing, and it hasn't panned out as potentially you think it would in the early part of the season. So, I want to be competitive. I want to be in the mix. I will be a thorn in some people's sides, and we'll see where that takes us.
Absolutely, that's what we want. And then one more personal question for me. What historic machinery can we see you out in between times? Are we going to see you in GT40s, Cortinas, Elans? What are we going to see you out when you're not in the Toyota?
Oh, God, everything. So we start at Goodwood for members meeting. I've got 1275 GT Mini. So I think the four house captains, so myself, Dario, Franchitti, Tom Christensen and Andy Prio were all racing minis at that, which would be quite good. Then I go from that to the...
What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, exactly. And then I've got a Volvo, a Bastos Volvo in the touring car race, I think, members meeting. Big slab of a thing, but apparently it's fast in a straight line, just doesn't stop or turn. So we'll have a good go in that. And then, Le Mans Classic a little bit later on this year. Really looking forward to that. Got the Executia Koss, Lister Nobly, the ex-Maston Gregory car that we'll take there again. A Porsche 934.5. So if you think the old kind of big winged kind of Kramer cars from the 80s. So got one of them to race up along as well. And then, of course, Spa 6 Hour, which I'll share in the land with Rory, my brother-in-law. So that'll be really cool again. And yet, all of a sudden, it'll be Revival and be racing just in about everything. I'm actually trying to race a bike at Revival as well. I've got an ex-Barry Sheen Manx Norton that actually belongs to Tony Hughes, believe it or not. He used to race touring cars a few years ago. There's plans of putting me on a bike at Revival as well.
Very, very early Speedworks driver.
Exactly. Yes.
Gordon, I thought you were quite sensible. But getting on a bike going around Goodwood, I think you may have. I think that might be a stretch.
Well,
fair play to you if you're brave enough for
that. Up for it. Yeah, be fine. Be fine.
Yeah. Mind you, if you've driven a Lotus Elan at Spa with GT40s flying past at God knows what speed, that must be quite focusing of the mind as well.
Yeah, definitely. Because every other time I've done Spa 6 Hours, I've done it in a GT40. And basically, doesn't really matter if you've got any rear view mirrors, because there's nothing coming past you in a straight line anyway. You just it is like Mario Kart. You're just passing people going so fast. But the Elan is very different. But we finished third overall in the Elan out of 120 cars and 22, 23 GT40s. And we finished third overall in an Elan, which was... a bit of a feat last year. So yeah, we're going to try and do the same again this year.
Yeah, any of the professional racing drivers in the GT40s that have finished behind you in Elan have got to hang their heads in shame there, haven't they, really? Come on. Well, actually, funny enough, I remember talking to Wyn Percy, because obviously he raced at Le Mans in both the big stuff and the small stuff, and said, which is harder? He said, the small stuff, much harder. He's like, with the big stuff, at least you're looking forwards all the time instead of in the mirrors.
And especially when it goes dark and maybe the weather's not great, and all of a sudden in the Elan, you feel really small in the Elan compared to the GT40. And it's just lights behind, and you don't know whether something's coming at you, doing... 50 miles an hour lower or 5 miles an hour more until it comes past and almost blows the doors off.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not something you'll have to worry about with the Toyota in British touring cars, which is, say, kicks off at Donington Park at the end of April. So thank you very much to Gordon Chen for joining us. Best of luck with the season ahead. I'm sure we'll have you on again later on in the season. You can tell us how it's going. Thank you very much to Marcus Simmons. Please check out allsport.com and Allsport Magazine for Marcus's coverage of the early rounds of the British Touring Car Championship. And thank you to you, the listeners. We'll be back soon with another Allsport podcast.